troops being given orders to deploy to the U.S.-Mexico border within the next few days. The troops will be preparing for the arrivals of Central American migrant caravans, one large one currently in southern Mexico, but still heading north towards the U.S. border. The troops' mission is to help Border Patrol agents secure the border as the caravan moves closer.
We have the authority given to us by Secretary Mattis. The units that are normally assigned weapons, they are in fact deploying with weapons.
That's U.S. General Terrence O'Shaughnessy of U.S. Northern Command. Those caravan members may not actually reach the border for another few weeks. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Whitey Bulger died today in federal custody nearly 5 years after being sentenced to spend the rest of his life in prison. He was 89 years old. You're listening to USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
President Trump and the First Lady are visiting Pittsburgh to express the support of the American people 3 days after a synagogue shooting. Now, some, including the Pittsburgh mayor, have asked the president to stay away while the funerals are taking place and so that the families can grieve properly. Meanwhile, others have said the president is certainly welcome in Pittsburgh. Rabbi Jeremy Weisblatt was asked about President Trump visiting Pittsburgh.
So there's a beautiful saying in the Jewish tradition called, these and these are the words of the ever-living God. Because I don't think one issue, almost nothing is completely one-sided. And I think Mayor Bill Peduto and Rabbi Meyer said it right. On the one hand, I think we need to be focused on the grieving in our community. We have such limited resources at the moment because of this tragedy and situation that we need to be focused on the mourners, and now is the time to grieve. And yet at the same time, I am an American, and he is our president, and if he chooses to come here to be with us, I would hope as Rabbi Myers that he would be willing to engage in a conversation, not just for the sake of conversation, but a conversation for action after the time of grieving has passed, for how we unite as all Americans to make it a country truly of the people, by the people, and for the people, how we can all stand together. It is not time to be a political, it is a time to mourn, it's a time to grieve, and those in power who can have these conversations and do something, I would hope they'd be ready to engage in constructive civil dialogue to begin that process.
That audio courtesy of Fox News. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
All right, welcome to our show this morning. Good morning, Hunterdon. I'm Jeannie Murphy filling in for Chris Bianco, Big C. He's not feeling well today. We're hoping he's feeling better. It's my pleasure, actually, to introduce you to three individuals that are in studio here at Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce radio station. Stephen Kaufman, Emily Raven, Standing Bear, and Patrick Little Wolf in studio again. And they're here to talk about an upcoming event. It's actually the Raritan Valley Community College is going to be hosting its first powwow on Saturday, April 9th, featuring Native American dancers, musicians, crafts, and foods from all across the United States and Canada. Gates are going to be open at 9 a.m., and it should not be missed. The grand entry starts at 12 o'clock noon. Again, numerous dancers and craft demonstrations. I know we're going to get into details about that. Everybody here, these three guests, are going to tell us all about what's going on. So I'm going to ask you first, Emily Raven Standing Bear, to say hello.
Hi.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Emily Raven Standing Bear, and I'm Okanichi Saponi, a nation that originated in the Virginias and North Carolina. There's actually only maybe 1,500 surviving descendants of my people, so our tribe is very small. Mm-hmm. And I am the executive producer of Ravenswing Productions, and the goal of the mission of my company is to share the Native American culture and to educate the public about Native American people and our traditions, and to increase awareness of some of the things that we're dealing with in the contemporary society. We do presentations at schools and libraries and museums.
Hello, it's Joe Peters with Real Estate Matters, and I've got John Rindell with me here today. Hello, John. How you doing?
Hey, Joe. Good. How you doing this afternoon?
Good. Your voice is picking up just fine.
Great.
So we're going to get started in about 2 minutes. I'm going to give a little bit about the weather, a little bit about myself, and then we'll get going. John is a mortgage person. We're going to talk all about financing today. So first things first, let me get intro music.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
So, hey, it's Joe Peters, and they asked me to give you a weather forecast before we get going, and it looks like we're going back to summer here. Right now, it is in Flemington, and today is the 30th?
Yep, October 30th.
October. Tomorrow's actually Halloween, and it's a little after 4 o'clock, and we're scenic downtown Flemington, and right now the temperature is 57 degrees, and it's going to get better. On Wednesday, we're looking at a high of 66, low of 52. On Thursday, a high of 70. Get out the golf clubs again, low of 59, 68. On Thursday, it's going to start raining, and it's going to drop us back down into the 50s during the day. So we're experiencing fall, winter, summer. I don't know what it is anymore. We've seen it went right from summer to winter, but it looks like we're getting a little bit of fall back. And we went to the Giants game on Sunday, and it sure felt like fall out there. And the Giants fell as well. Another whole story. Let me tell you a little about myself, and we'll be back to talk with John.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
So hi, it's Joe Peters again, and we're back to talk about what's happening in real estate in Hunterdon County. I've got sitting here with me John Rindell. John, why don't you go backwards and come forward? Tell us a little about your history and how you got into mortgages and who you're working for and what's upmost on your mind today.
All right. Thank you, Joe, and thanks for having me as a guest here today. I'm a mortgage banker, a direct lender for a company called Finance of America. Finance America is owned by Blackstone, which is one of the largest private equity firms in the world. We specialize in commercial and residential real estate holdings, and we also specialize in residential and small commercial financing. I have 30 years of mortgage lending experience. I own my own company for 15 years. I was a mortgage broker from 1995 to 2010 when the market crashed. Brokers basically were put out of business. Most of the lending went back to the larger banking institutions. The theory was that with the collapse of the real estate and the mortgage market in the late 2008-2009, that the mortgages would be better served by larger banking institutions. So that's one of the reasons why I went with a big company like Blackstone, where we have a tremendous amount of equity in the company, and we lend our own money, and we service our own products. So it's a great company to work for and a great experience for our customers.
Well, great, and welcome. Thank you for coming on the show. We're going to spend the next 40 minutes or so just talking about what's happening in the market, what you're seeing from the mortgage viewpoint, and how your company can serve people that have got questions and how people can get in touch with you and with me. So, first of all, why don't you tell us the name of your company again and your phone number?
Okay. Again, it's Finance of America, a Blackstone company. My cell phone number is 908-399-9550. And my cell phone is something I carry with me 24/7. Most of my business is done in the evenings and over the weekends. The reason for that is that's when people are out looking at homes and making offers on homes. Joe, being in the real estate business, knows this. Generally, he's finding that he's showing people houses on a Saturday, and by the end of the weekend on a Sunday, he might be putting an offer in. And one of the roles I play in the real estate industry is when somebody's ready to make an offer, I will do what they call a pre-approval. A pre-approval is analysis of the borrower's credit, income, assets, and liabilities to determine if they can buy the house that they're looking to place an offer on. So I reassure a person like Joe that, hey, I spoke to this client. I'll put in writing that they can get the mortgage they're looking to obtain. And then once he gets a pre-approval from me, he can submit a full-fledged offer and negotiate a price on a home. So it's a very important piece of the puzzle in terms of what I do for the service for my clients and also for the real estate community.
So I know a lot of times when I'm talking to somebody on a Saturday or a Sunday, I'm saying, well, we're going to need a pre-approval letter, because when we go to make an offer, we have to have a letter from an approved lender like John, who's checked them out and can say that they're qualified to make the loan. We don't want anybody to be talking to a buyer who's not qualified. So it's just done, as a matter of fact, across all agencies, across all houses. And people say, well, it's Sunday. Nobody works on a Sunday. So, no, that's our business. We work on Saturdays, Sundays, and evenings. If you've got a mortgage person that's not working on Sundays, you need another mortgage person.
That's a good quote.
I had a fellow came in for USAA. I love USAA. I love helping veterans. I couldn't get in touch with their mortgage people over the weekend. I'm saying, wait a minute. We took them somewhere else. It's not something you want to. You could lose out on a competitive bid because you're not getting the mortgage paper put together. So I get into, and I'm looking at what Kate gave us to talk about. Now, Kate is our mutual marketing person who said, let me give you a few talking points and you guys just go from there. And the first point she has said, can I qualify to buy a home? I'm 22 years old, from college in the next few months, just getting out, and upon graduation, I'm going to need a place to live. Right now, I work part-time. Renting can be so expensive. Can I qualify? How do you address something like that?
Hey, Joe, that's a great question, and I'm seeing this scenario come up more and more in this marketplace, and I'll tell you the reason for it. Rents have gotten relatively expensive, and it's all supply and demand, and there's a lot of people out there looking for housing, and their feeling is, geez, I can't afford to buy a home, so let me go rent. And all of a sudden, they talk to a realtor, they talk to a landlord, and find out that the rents are not cheap anymore.
No.
It's a landlord's market in terms of what they can charge on a rent. So the other alternative is, hey, can I buy a home? Well, we're going to look at a lot of different moving parts and pieces of the puzzle when somebody buys a home. And as I spoke before about pre-approval, we're going to look at income, assets, liabilities, and credit rating. So somebody that's just new into the marketplace or the workplace and doesn't have much of a history may have a difficult time buying a home. In this scenario that I've seen over the last couple of months, some individuals have talked to their parents. And their parents, maybe at this point in time, does not have a mortgage or has very little balance on a mortgage, they're inclined to take a look at what the ramifications are to help their son or daughter buy their first home by co-signing on the loan. So this is something that FHA used to do a lot of when a first-time homebuyer would come in to buy a home, they'd get a co-signer. Now you're seeing conventional mortgages offering this option too, and you can see this option with as little as 5% down on a conventional mortgage. So the individual will get a good interest rate, 5% down payment, and then their parents can help them qualify for the mortgage. So you know, in this scenario, the parents, if they're willing to do it and they trust their son or daughter, it may not be a bad idea to help them out getting into their first home.
Well, and I've got to vouch for the fact that rents are high. We've had so few rentals. We're sitting at about 2.5% vacancy rate. We're typically triple that. And as a result, a minimum first one-bedroom apartment, condo, townhouse, the townhouses are usually bigger than one bedroom, is going to run you $1,350. For $1,350, you could probably buy that place and
correct,
be getting some equity out of there every year. So a lot of people don't realize that if you're qualified, you can buy the place cheaper than you can rent it. And then I get the opposite argument coming back. I mean, very yin, there's a yang. People are saying, yeah, but I'm only going to be in this job 2 or 3 years. In 2 or 3 years, you could turn a $150,000 place into $180,000, sell it, and move on with the $30,000 less a few expense dollars.
Sure. Yeah, I was actually talking to a couple, and I'm doing their second mortgage. 5 years ago, I did the mortgage when they bought their first residence. And a small, relatively small condominium here in Hunterdon County, I think it was Hunter's Crossing. And they in 5 years, made close to $40,000 or $50,000 of appreciation.
Wow.
So it can be done.
So I tell people, look, even if you're going to move every 2 or 3 years, it still makes sense to get in. From an owning perspective, you can live where you want to live, you can have the place you want to have, you can decorate it the way you want to decorate it, and you don't have to get out on somebody's schedule. Renting means sooner or later you're going to want the place back. And it's a lot of times it's because they can rent it for more than they're renting it to you. So if they're not going to want it back, they're going to want more rent. Owning a place gives you a lot of comfort factor. Plus, you're making a little bit of equity each year.
Correct.
Right now, our under 500Ks are probably doing 6 or 7% a year. So if you owned a $150,000 house, got 6% on it, 1% would be $1,500. So you'd be making like $9,000 a year in equity,
mm-hmm,
just by owning it and paying off the mortgage, which is the same as you'd pay for rent. So if you're paying for rent, you're really paying the landlord's mortgage for him.
Correct.
And he's getting the equity growth.
Right. And also another attraction to owning is you're building up credit by paying on a mortgage.
Right.
If you're paying it on a monthly basis on time, then that's a good credit reference.
And then I think that parents co-signing is a wonderful thing. But one thing I'm running into is that for the last 8, 9, 10 years, we had a tough economic crisis. We've been at it for 3 or 4 years. But there's a lot of kids still living in a rec room. And the parents are saying, you know, Mom and I would like to have the house back, and they'll help you get started elsewhere. So if it's not a co-signer, maybe it's a loan. I mean, the parents can give you a loan. They can give you, without taxation, a certain amount of money each year.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certain components, though, you as a person getting a mortgage need to have. One is you need to be employed. Two is you need to have some credit. And thirdly, you've got to be making a certain level of income. So why don't we go through those basics? I mean, how long does somebody have to be into a job in order to get a mortgage?
Well, when you're qualifying for a mortgage, the underwriter is going to look at a two-year track record.
Okay.
So just because you've been working for 6 months or starting a new job doesn't mean you couldn't qualify for a loan. But they're going to say, what have you been doing for the last 2 years? In a lot of scenarios that I see, the individuals have been in college.
Right.
So they just graduated in December, they graduated in May. So if you can give us a copy of your diploma, your transcripts, that will show that you are working in your craft or your field and making yourself more employable and building up a little bit of a resume in order to become employable. So they will look at a two-year track record. If you weren't doing anything in the last 2 years, then if you start a job today, they would most likely look for a six-month track record. At least of employment, if you were unemployed for, let's say, the last 2 years and maybe just kind of traveling around the country
yeah.
and enjoying yourself. They don't want to see that trend.
And the job has to be more than pushing carriages at Walmart. I mean, if they're paying for what you need to earn by pushing carriages, that would work. But I'm not picking on Walmart. They're usually not the highest paying jobs. Okay, it's a minimum wage plus a dollar or so. What you really need to do, because the lender is going to look at not only how long have you been in a job, but what are you making and what is your upward progression possibilities there. So there's a ratio that they typically use of somewhere about 30% of your gross up front.
You know what, over the years, and you're right, when lenders used to look at their housing payment of borrowers, it was like 30%, even 28% of the gross monthly income. Believe it or not, now it's in the 40s.
Really?
And if not a little bit higher in some scenarios. You're going to look at two things. When they look at your debts and they look at your income, they're going to look at your housing payment and see what your gross income is compared to your monthly housing payment. But they're also going to calculate your other monthly debts. And this is where I see most of the young people getting into trouble.
Right.
You know, they get their first job and they go out and buy that BMW and they're paying $600 or $700 a month on this car. Well, guess what? When it comes to buying a house, they're going to calculate that debt against you.
Right.
And you can only afford a $150,000 mortgage. So my suggestion is, yeah, if you want, you need a car, go out and get something, but keep the payment down as low as possible because
right.
it's going to impact what you can afford in terms of a house. So you have to get your priorities set.
And what about student debt? That comes into play as well.
You know what? It's a shame, but college debt is fairly high here in the United States, and college is very expensive. So when you start looking at monthly debt, in a lot of situations, you'll have people that graduated college and they do have a student loan they have to pay. I know some of these agencies are fairly flexible in terms of your repayment. So you'll have to look at your income and look at the monthly debt on your student loans. There are ways to refinance that loan and get the payment down. And I have done some mortgages for individuals that came to me and they had $1,000 or $1,200 a month in terms of a student loan payment. And we were able to get it down to maybe $500 or $600 and therefore help them qualify for a little bit more. So you are seeing avenues over the last year or two where there is a little bit more flexibility in terms of the repayment of these student loans,
okay.
where it doesn't choke the individual and prevent them from buying a
house. Minimum front end is somewhere in the 30% range, and back end, that means we're going to add in your car, your credit cards, your student debt. It could be up into the high 40s, you're saying.
Well, yeah, your best available rates in terms, they say 45.
Okay,
but they will go up to 50%. You might have to pay a little higher interest rate because your debt load's a little bit higher.
Right.
But on a conventional loan, their maximum debt-to-income ratio with your housing payment plus your all other monthly payments can't be more than 50% of your gross income. So, I mean, if you're making $60,000 a year, that's $5,000 a month. So your debts can total $2,500 a month.
Right.
You know, if you have a $750 car payment and a $300 or $400 student loan, it doesn't give you much for a mortgage.
That's why
you have to be clerical. But it is pretty liberal. You know, on $5,000 a month, $2,500 in terms of monthly debt.
But upfront, I said you probably could rent something for $1,350. You probably could buy it for that much or less or more, somewhere in that. It depends on your credit. But if your credit is, or your proportions are out of proportion, you're going to pay a little bit more for your interest, which means your payment is going to be a little more.
Correct. Yeah. The best available rates and terms are through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which are government agencies that offer mortgage financing. And they tier the interest rate, or they tier the rate that you pay on your mortgage based on your qualifications. So the better the credit score, obviously, the better the rate. And the lower your debt to income, the better the rate would be on something like that.
Right. Now, what about credit itself? I mean, we all hear about this FICO score. So I guess it's sort of the report card on how well you pay your bills and what your proportions are as to what you owe versus what you can borrow.
That's a good point, Joe. I mean, it is something that people are more and more aware of what their FICO scores are. And there's different ways to calculate a FICO score. Most notably, somebody's going to look at a website called Credit Karma,
right,
which is a free website which will give you two of your three FICO scores. The only problem with Credit Karma or a website like Credit Karma is that their FICO scoring system doesn't coincide with the mortgage FICO scoring system.
Okay.
So when a mortgage lender goes to calculate a FICO score, they take into account 8 or 9 factors for their score. Credit Karma probably only takes into 5 or 6.
So they're going to be a little higher than what.
So yeah, correct. Credit Karma, generally I find it's 20-25 points higher than our mortgage credit report. But it is something that gauges if you need to work on your credit.
Right.
If you're in the mid sixes or even low sixes, then you need a little bit of work on your credit.
So typically we've all been brought up, and I know it's not the truth anymore, so I'm going to talk about it, to say, well, you got to have 750s. Well, there's not that many people walking around with 750s. They're out there, but there's not that many of them. I've heard recently that as long as you can clear a 675 on a mortgage credit FICO, should be able to get a mortgage. Is that the truth, or is it a little higher than that?
You know what? That's not a bad score, but you are right. You should strive to get over 700, 720. The closer you can get to 800, the better the rates and terms you'll get. But we don't live in a perfect world, and sometimes people get behind or incur a little bit more than a debt that they can afford. So we're seeing borrowers come to us in low sixes, like 620 is a threshold for a lot of our mortgages, that if you're above 620, then we can get you a loan. There are also loans available that will go to 580.
Really?
But, you know, it's going to be relatively expensive.
Right.
When I sit down with a borrower, one of the first things I talk to him about is credit, and we'll do a free credit report for them and a free credit analysis. And if they're under 600, I'd like to try to get them to a point where at least they're 620, and there's ways we can do that.
So what are the aspects of a credit score? I mean, one of them is making your payments on time. We all know that. But another is I have an open to buy credit-wise of $100,000 across all my, and I've used up $80,000 of it. That's sort of a red flag that they're using too much of their credit.
Right.
Credit cards were, believe it or not, meant to be paid back every month. Very few people, I happen to be one of them, do that. But
right.
Okay, so don't pay every penny back every month, but still don't owe more than 25% of your open to buy, because the closer you get to the max, the harder it is or the more expensive it is to get a mortgage.
Joe, you're 100% correct, and I see a lot of times where individuals will have a fair amount of credit available to them, but they're maxing out. And when they calculate the credit scores, they look at percentages, and that percentage is the amount of credit outstanding to the amount of credit that you can obtain. you should try to keep it under 20-25%. That might be difficult for people to do. Once you start getting over 50%, you're going to see a decrease in your credit score.
Right.
And if you max out the card, then your credit's going to go down even further. One of the things that I can do in terms of my credit analysis is just look at how much debt you have compared to available credit. And the solution is, hey, if you want to increase your credit rating, just, you know, take $1,000 or $5,000 and pay down your credit card debt, and you'll, within a month, you'll see an immediate impact in terms of raising your credit score.
I've had people tell me that look, the guy's credit's only 680, but if he pays off these free cards, and it's not $2,000 to do that, even if he borrows it from mom and dad,
right,
his credit score could go up 30 points, and
correct,
then, in effect, it's much, not only is he more eligible, he or she more eligible, but going to get a much better rate, and the rate is half the battle.
Right, exactly, because that dictates what your payment is going to be, right, on a monthly basis, and of course everybody wants to, as low a monthly payment as they can get.
So sometimes the banks are asking for points up front. There's all sorts of deals. I mean, if you go to creditrate.com or one of these that shows you all of today's rates, I did it today just to see. I bought the points with 30 years around 4.75%, looks like it's right there, 4.7 something. But there's all sorts of deals there, you know, 2 points down. So the straightest loan is to come to a lender and say, I want to borrow, let's just make up numbers. I want to buy a $150,000 house and I want to put 5% down. So 10% would be 15, so it's 7,500 down. And it's probably going to take you about 3% of the cost to close. And that includes your title search and your first year's insurance and the first quarter's taxes and the attorney's fees and all the other things that go together. So you need the 7,500 and you probably need another 7,500 to close. You need 15,000 to close. Now you can go to mom and dad and borrow that, or you could finance it and have mom and dad co-sign if mom and dad can or want to. There's two different questions with mom and dad. I know I've never done it with my children, but that's a whole different story.
Correct.
It's a different time and a different place. None of my kids were in my basement at 35 years old, so I might have if they were.
Right. Correct. Yeah. So there are minimum down payments in a lot of scenarios. Fannie Mae says 3%. So in your illustration, you were using 5%. In today's lending environment, you can get the money from a relative or close relative for your down payment and closing cost. And Joe, one of the things that I see a lot of times with these first-time home buyers is they go in and negotiate a purchase price on a home with as little as 3% or 5% down, and then they look for the seller to pick up the closing cost.
Okay.
And so as a realtor, you're probably familiar with that scenario and seen it before, and good or bad, depending on what side of the transaction you may be on. But ultimately, the buyer ends up paying that, I believe, in the purchase price, correct?
Right.
So in your illustration, $150,000, if my buyer wanted to, let's say, get $5,000 back from the seller, we would look to negotiate a price of $155,000 with the $5,000 back. So it's just added to the purchase price on the transaction. And there are pros and cons in doing that. And maybe, Joe, as a realtor, why don't you come back to me and say how you would view a transaction like that in terms of maybe as a listing agent or as a buyer's agent?
We see them. The issue is, and I have to write into the contract that all you're really paying me is $150,000. That's all the house has to appraise for. If it appraises for less than that, in other words, if you're asking for a 155 mortgage and it only appraises for 150, that's fine. If it appraises for 151, the rest of it's your problem. If it appraises for 149, I have to come up with $1,000 or we have to negotiate. If it appraises for 151, the other 4,000 is the buyer's problem, not the seller's problem.
Right.
So the seller's not going to go on a hook for appraisal value. The other thing is, it's an expensive way to borrow that $5,000, because what you're doing is you're borrowing it for 30 years at 4.75% of my today's rates.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time you pay it back, you're probably paying multiples of it back. And yeah, most mortgages refinance at 7 years anyway, or shorter, so you're never going to carry it that far. It's still better than renting.
Correct.
It's still better than renting.
It still may work out better than renting.
So it's a device. And then let's talk about types of mortgages. And I want to get into the self-employed people, because we're a big self-employed market here in Hunterdon County. You can get a conventional if you've probably got 720s and you've got good credit. So if we're in a sub-700 market, you're probably talking FHA.
Correct. Yes. When you're below 700, a lot of times what you're looking at is an FHA loan. But getting back to a self-employed borrower, not only are they looking at the credit rating,
right,
they are looking at his tax returns for his income.
Okay.
And typically that's where a self-employed borrower may run into a bit of a problem. If you work for a company and they pay you a salary and you get a W-2 and a pay stub, that's your income. What you show on your pay stub and what you show on your W-2, that's what we use as your income. Well, if you're the owner of a company, you can be grossing $500,000, but at the end of the day, when you have expenses, and we all have accountants that we pay nice fees to, and,
right,
and their theory is, well, we're going to get your income down as low as possible so you don't pay any taxes. Conversely, when you go to get a mortgage, it makes it more difficult to qualify. And again, the best rates and terms would be a higher credit score over 700 and your DTI under 45%. But a lot of times with the self-employed borrowers, they won't fit into that DTI parameter.
Right.
So there are other programs available. We do have a program that says for a self-employed borrower, if they have 5 years in their business, if their business has been open for more than 5 years, we could look at just 1 year's tax returns as
right,
opposed to the standard 2 years. So that's a little bit of a nuance that we have in terms of one of our Fannie Mae products.
DTI being debt to income, and that's where we're saying it's probably somewhere in the 40% that you want to be, be before somebody. I know I had a customer came to me and said, Joe, I got $65,000 in cash. I should be golden. But when the mortgage guy looked at him, he had a 60% DTI. He had maxed out all his cards to get that cash in the bank.
Oh, yeah, right.
And there's just no way in hell he was going to get a mortgage with it.
Right.
So you've got to fit within the parameters. I mean, let's run through them quickly again. You've got to have a job and not a minimum wage job. You've got to have some money or be able to put your hands on some money. And you've got to have a decent credit score. You
Correct.
Get those three things put together, we probably can get you a mortgage, but then it depends on how much you make and it depends on how good your credit is.
Well, sometimes that's the problem, too. One of my responsibilities, not only to the borrower but to the real estate agent, is to make sure that homes that the individual or the couple are looking at is something that they can afford. You have to consider, you know, what the monthly payment is on the mortgage, along with taxes and insurances. So I think you find here in New Jersey that houses are relatively expensive. I guess, Joe, you would know better than me, but most of the people that are out there looking are trying to find something around $300,000 or
right,
$350,000. Well, in Somerset County or even Hunterdon County, what can you get? So the only alternative, if you will take a condo or a townhouse, maybe you'll be able to afford, something around $250,000 or something in that price range. In order to do that, an individual would probably have to show about $60,000 a year worth of income to get into something in that price range.
I go backwards with it, and I say if you were to hit the 30% level at just this is going towards mortgage, this isn't your whole credit scenario, like your car payment, your student payment, a few credit cards you might have, to get the 30% ratio for every $1,250 you have, you've got to make $50,000.
Right.
That's tough because
right,
you can't buy anything for $1,250.
Right.
You need probably more like 1.5 to 2 times that to buy 100 in Somerset County. Rule of thumb, in New Jersey, average house sells for $330,000. We're not an average county. We're a very affluent county, and Somerset is even more affluent as far. Our average selling price in Hunterdon County is $400,000. Our average price in Somerset County is $500,000. So we just don't have houses that are $330,000. They're hard. If you can find them, they're going to be gone before you get the mortgage approval back. They go overnight.
Right.
So it's tough to find a house at that point. And people say, well, then I'm just going to rent. Well, that is a decision you can make, but there's not a lot to rent. And rent is probably going to be more than what the mortgage payment would be. So if you got those three magic things, a job, some money, and some credit, we probably could get you into the house you're going to rent and own it cheaper than right. renting it. But some people just aren't going to qualify.
Well, I think they also have to understand it may not be the house of their dreams, and
right.
especially
it's a starter home.
It's a starter home. It's the first home, and I can remember back in the 1980s when I bought my first home. The rates are like 16%,
wow.
and I actually thought I was smart because I said if I have to pay more than 3 points, I'm going to have the seller pick up 1 point. Well, it ended up being 16.25% with 5 points, so I ended up paying 4 points.
Wow!
In order to do that or get into a home, we had to buy a townhouse. And I do see that market, viable for first-time home buyers. As you said, instead of renting an apartment or a condominium, why don't you look at buying it and seeing what your payment is on a monthly basis? And it's a good place to start. And I see that marketplace, at least in Hunterdon County and most likely also in Somerset County, is pretty active right now because
right.
it is an affordable place to start.
Well, and nothing to do with mortgages, but we don't have a lot of free market affordable housing. We have
right.
affordable housing that you have to qualify by having low income or moderate income. But free market, like take the entire Beaverbrook area. They built five of those 10 developments that are in there since 2000 to 2005 time frame. They were all in the anywhere from 175 to 300,000. Now, we haven't built anything like that in the last 15 years. So those units are selling in the 375 to 450 range. They're not even entry level anymore. And there's no entry level being built. It's a whole subject matter called affordable or COA housing that needs to be satisfied. And I think we're getting there. But our biggest problem is the property costs so much money, you can't build a house for $150,000, $200,000, $250,000 in Hunterdon County. Mm-hmm. Your typical house is going to be, and I'll give you a great example, on Lee Street going into Clinton, there were two lots. The guy paid 2.25 a lot for the two lots. They're both 1-acre lots. The builder talked to him, and I'm saying, okay, we're thinking 55 plus. We'd like to get on a one floor, 1,800, two-car garage, a little bit of a basement, just to have some storage. He said, that'll put you in a 650 range.
Wow.
I'm saying, okay, for 650 range, I can go buy a Center Hall Colonial. Of course, it's not one floor, but that's the problem. The land costs so much. Now, I think he paid a lot of money for it because it
right.
was Clinton, not Clinton Township, and it had city water, city sewer,
sure.
which raises the price. But land is expensive, and I know I talk with Rob Matera about this as well, saying, why can't we put up some free $400,000? He says, we don't have the price of land to put up houses like that. And in a lot of instances, the towns say, you got to build on 1 to 3 acres, and you have to put up 3,200 square foot. Well, 3,200 square foot at $2 a square foot, or even $1.50 if you're really chintzy on your building, is a lot of money. So the land is going to cost you $200 minimum, and then you're going to put up another $300,000 or $400,000 structure on it. You haven't put a blade of grass or a light bulb in a place yet. So you still got a long ways to go. So Hunterdon's expensive, and Somerset's more expensive yet.
And part of the problem, it sounds like you're saying, is supply and demand.
Right.
There are demands out there, but where is the supply coming from? And there's no new inventory coming on the market. So that's a problem for affordable housing.
Even when we get into the 55 plus, we're seeing people, they got a $600,000 house, they have 50% equity, they'd like to sell it, buy something for $300,000 and own it mortgage free. We don't have any 55 pluses that are under $450,000.
Yeah.
And most of them, If you look at what's being built on Route 22 across from Polar Cub there in that general area, mm-hmm. they're in the sixes and sevens. These yeah. are people that are just getting out of their mega mansions, finding a place where they don't have to cut the grass and do anything outside.
Right.
They're still living in large 55 pluses, and 55 plus comes, I'm getting off track, in two levels. 55 to 65 probably still have kids in college and they come home on the weekends, and then 65 to 75 is like Marilyn and I are saying, we need to get on one floor eventually. It's going up right. and down the stairs may be good exercise, but eventually we're not going to be able to do it.
Sure.
And there's nothing. We've looked. There's right. nothing. There's two exceptions. You can buy in Flemington Fields for about $3.25.
Okay.
May not be the living arrangement because they're twos and fours. They're not standalones like you would find in maybe...
Kind of like a quad or something.
A quad,
like that.
Yeah. Canal Walk's got some standalones that you can get into for $400, and it's not a bad arrangement, but it's a gated community. We just don't have a lot to offer, and we don't, there's a demand, but at the same time, the next generation of 55 pluses is only half the size of the last, so I think the people with 55 pluses are going to find they're lowering their prices to get it down to where people can buy. Another whole thing. What about, and I get this constantly, why I'm thinking about fixing up versus buying a bigger house. Add on to the house I got. So
sure.
that's always an argument.
You know what? It's something that we're seeing more and more with individuals that see what's out there in the marketplace. They'd like to move for more space. Their family's growing. They're having mm-hmm. another child. And they just look and say there's nothing available, or what's available is out of our price range. So the decision is, let's stay put and let's add on. Well, years ago there was no financing available, or it was difficult to get financing to add on to your home. Nowadays there are a couple different loans available. Most notably, FHA has what they call the 203 loan. It's a rehabilitation loan. It can be used for either purchases or refinances. But it's good for an individual that owns a home and maybe wants to put an addition on his home. And it's a way for them to actually get money in order to start the project. They can get material cost up front. And then they can get disbursements on the loan during the construction phases in order to pay their contractors to keep them on the job. So it is a viable alternative. It is done through FHA, so it might be a little bit more expensive than a conventional loan. But when you look at the alternatives, if there's no other way to do this financing and no other way to put an addition on your home, it works out to be a favorable transaction in order to get the money to add on to your home. Sometimes people will take an FHA 203K loan, put the addition onto the house, and maybe add a lot of value to the point where they can refinance into a conventional loan and get out of the FHA. But for the short term, it may be the only viable alternative in terms of renovating a home. And again, it can be used for a purchase or a refinance.
And once again, you're listening to John Reindel, R-E-I-N-D-E-L, if I'm
correct.
Spelling it correctly, Finance yeah. of America. And he's at 908-399-9550.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to talk to John directly, and I'm Joe Peters, 908-238-0118. Let's talk a little about what I'm starting to see with seniors, and I like to say 10 years ago I couldn't spell senior, now I are one. Seniors are starting to say, why are we out of inventory? We're out of inventory because people in the 55, in the 50s, who usually buy that one more big house after the kids go off to school, they buy their dream house, decided that's not a good investment anymore. So let me sit where I'm at and do what he just described and over-improve the house I'm in. We like the neighborhood. We like the neighbors. We do want more first floor living. So let's take the living room, turn it into a master bedroom suite, and we'll make the upstairs bedrooms for when the kids come over, or a hobby room, and we'll reconfigure the house. That kind of loan that you just talked about would be good for doing that, wouldn't it?
Sure, absolutely. And again, the trend is because there's not a lot of inventory available, people are staying put and putting money into their home, fixing it up. And in some situations, the plan might be, hey, I'm going to retire in 2 or 3 years, and I'd like to maximize the value of my home when I sell it. the kitchen needs to be redone, or we need to remodel the bathroom, or we need to put another bathroom on, or we need to fix the basement up, whatever the repair is. It's just not something that maybe you want to do for long term. It might just be just add marketability to your home when you do retire or when you do downsize. So it's another avenue in order to enhance your position in the marketplace when you do go to sell the home. If you're going to be there long term, it would make your house a little bit more comfortable in terms of your living space.
We are seeing people do some things that aren't conducive to it being marketable, though. We see people turning four bedrooms into three bedrooms because they're making a big master bedroom suite. They're reconfiguring the house that it's at the point the next person to buy it isn't looking for what they just did. It worked for them. So if you're going to do something like that, the best direction I can give you is make it so you can put it back. People are still going to want four-bedroom houses, or at least three bedrooms. I mean, one of the big... I just talked to a doctor here in town right before the show, and he's got a high-level, almost $1 million house, and he's wondering why it's taken so long to sell. And I'm saying, because we sell about three a month and above the $800,000 price point in Hunterdon County. And there's 125, 150 houses on the market. Divide one into the other. You got a 3 to 4 year wait just to sell your house. So your house has to be exceptional in order to sell first. And usually exceptional comes in pricing. So it's either in a great location, in great shape, or at a great price, or parts of all three. And the point I'm getting to is we don't have a market for certain kinds of houses in Hunterdon County. Great example, contemporaries. Only 4% of the people in the world want to live in a contemporary. Okay, so if you've bought a contemporary because you liked it, that means you probably didn't think about selling it, because when you go to sell it, you're going to find out not too many people like that style, especially less than were 15 or 20 years ago when the Brady Bunch lived in a contemporary. It's probably more than 20 years ago already. Good grief. That was shag carpet days. So you've got to keep in mind what you're doing to your house to make it livable for the rest of your tenure is marketable when you go to sell it. And that's a problem for some people. Everything I see people doing is taking a look. I just had a call last week, and the guy said, well, we sold the big house you bought us, and we bought a new townhouse because we decided we're only going to have one child and we didn't need the big house. Mm-hmm. We didn't realize the maintenance that was involved until we got in here for a year or two. Well, he didn't sell it for me. He did it for sale by owner and got lucky, I think, in an upward market in a town that was hot over in Hillsborough. But he said, I want to buy a couple of houses and flip them. He said, I see this house for $175. I'll give them $100 right now, cash. I said, they won't take it. I mean, what do you think you are, a wheeler dealer? If the house is listed for $175, we sell on average 3% off of asking. Now, maybe it's asking a little high and it has to get $150, but you're still not going to get it for $100. Right. So we took a look. I said, look, let's go look at a couple and see what you can buy. And so we looked at a house in Somerville, on the wrong side of the track. Somerville's a town that's coming back. It's going to be a great town someday. Mm-hmm. But there's a good side of Somerville and not such a good side. There's not a bad side of Somerville, but just better than others. And this wasn't in the better. And we went into this house, and I always say when you go to a house that needs to be rehabbed, you either need to go home and take a bath or you need to go home and boil yourself.
Right.
And this was almost a boil yourself. It was a short sale. Uh-huh. It was a house that needed to go down to the studs. Neither one of us wanted to go down the basement after we looked down the stairs. It was a house that probably needed, and it was probably an 800 square foot 1920s house. It probably needed $75,000. Just a kitchen and two bathrooms is going to cost you $30,000 or $40,000.
Yeah.
They got to take all the walls down, put new walls up, new floors down, air conditioning, heat.
Mm-hmm.
I said, are you thinking about painting a couple of rooms? This isn't painting a couple of rooms. This is major surgery that you're looking to do. And if you have to pay retail to do surgery, then you're at a disadvantage, because every house you're going to look at, and investors already looked at, and every house that they've looked at, they've rejected because it's still on the market, which means they're asking too much for an investor to flip this house.
Right.
What makes you think you can flip it by paying retail? So you do get people looking in that area, I guess.
You know what? And I blame it on television.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure.
But, you know what? I could look at both sides of the coin on this. There are people out there that are buying houses, and in most cases, they're bank-owned properties.
Right.
They're foreclosed on, and the bank wants to sell them. In that situation, you're right, it's usually a cash offer that ends up buying it because you can't get financing. I think in these bank-owned properties, in the multiple listing, you'll see either cash or 203K loan, which is your rehab loan we had talked about earlier. But fixing and flipping is not as easy as they make it appear.
Right.
And it's not all glamour as you see on television. And you have to do your homework. In a lot of cases, that the investors that are buying homes, and these are foreclosed homes or houses that are way below market, and then they fix them up and sell them at market or a little bit above market if they can make a profit on it, they may look at 100 homes before they decide to buy one. You really have to buy right, and you almost have to know what you're doing. So somebody do it on a, you know, as a second income or a part-time basis, not a lot of knowledge of construction.
Right.
I urge them, please, you know, walk away. If you really need a house, buy something that's in good shape. Because one, you're going to have difficult time getting financing, and two, it could be the money pit that you're
And then the other thing is you're not going to get it at 5% down. If it's an investment property, you're probably going to pay 25-30% down minimum to get into it.
If you can finance it at all. Again,
right.
A lot of these properties you can't finance because of the shape of the property, and there's not a bank on earth that would want to lend on it.
Right, right. So that's what's happening in the market today. I think if you were to take a look at it and say, where are we at sitting here on October 30th, 2 days before November, we're at a point where surprisingly we're listing a lot of houses. And we've had a very good year. The stuff that came on, it was clean sold. Sometimes it sold the day it come on. Sometimes it sold the day before it came on because the listing agent said, I have a buyer for this. It never even made the market. So you say, if we're out of inventory, how are we selling? Because they're selling immediately. And it's not only Hunterdon, and I do half my business in Somerset County. But there is mortgage money available. So if you want to buy a unit as an investor, your best bet is probably buying a little one-bedroom condo that might buy Spruce Hills. We could probably buy them for 115, rent them for 1350. It's a 1% rule. If you get more, if you bought it for 115, you got to clear $1,150 to break even on a monthly basis. You might have to put $5,000 or $10,000 in after you buy it, but it's doable. To go out and look at a 1920s house that somebody's trying to get $175,000 for and it needs to be gutted, and if it was perfect, the most you could get for it is $250,000, is insane. Investors have walked by. An investor, because I deal with them, will not buy a house that they can't make $40,000 in the middle on. So that means they'd have to buy the $175,000 that you're looking at, put $75,000 into it, and get $40,000 on top of it. So now they got to get $290,000, and the finished house is only worth. So they walk away. It makes no sense.
The numbers don't add up. They don't add up.
So John Rydell, finances.
Finance of America.
Finance of America. I knew John from another company, and I'm learning his new name. And John's been here a few years already, and he's at 908-399-9550. My name is Joe Peters, and I'm with Coldwell Banker. I'm going to play my commercial one more time. And, John, we've got about a half a minute left. What would you like to say that we haven't already?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you, Joe, for having me here today and talk to you about real estate in Hunterdon and Somerset County and also financing for these residential properties in these counties. I am licensed in all New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Sometimes the scenario is that New Jersey doesn't work out, but if you're looking to go into Pennsylvania, I can help you in that state also. It was a pleasure again being here today and talking about financing. My number is 908 399 9550. If you're looking to find out what your credit score is, you're looking to find out what your credit is, or even make an offer on a home, give me a call and I'll walk you through your credit and give you a pre-approval for the home that you're looking to buy.
Thank you, John. I appreciate you coming on. Here's my commercial one more time, and Greg will be on to do his music show in about 4 minutes.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
USA Radio News.
President Trump told the political website Axios that he plans to issue an executive order ending birthright citizenship. He also said he's tired of waiting on others to tackle the illegal immigration issue. John Yoo is a professor of law at the University of California, Berkeley. He talks about some of the challenges President Trump will face.
Neither the president nor the Congress can change that rule. Even if there were flexibility there, it would still be up to Congress because the Constitution gives Congress the power over naturalization, deciding who becomes a citizen or not, not the president.
Apple unveiled a new lineup of Macs and iPads, including an upgraded MacBook Air, Mac Mini, and larger iPad. And Boston gangster James Whitey Bulger died in federal custody nearly 5 years after being sentenced to spend the rest of his life in prison